Hey everyone, welcome to Blood Rituals. I'm your host, Nicole Fernandez, and today we're going to be talking about Jason Moss. He is one of the most interesting figures in true crime history because not only was he pen pals with several serial killers, he ended up killing himself on June 6, 2006. And not only that, my mom actually went to high school with him, so there's a lot to unpack here. This person is very interesting, and the reason why is because he wrote a book called The Last Victim, which essentially paints the whole entire picture of his story for you. He wrote to various serial killers, the worst kind, essentially, and the most famous. He wrote John Wayne Gacy consistently. He visited John Wayne Gacy and had like 3 hour long visits with him alone, essentially in jail. And not only that, Jason Moss, he uncovered the truth whenever it comes to becoming the perfect victim or being the perfect victim. He understood what it meant to be completely powerless and forced to say things or do things that you wouldn't normally do in your own life. He thought that writing letters to serial killers would put him at a distance for some reason, because he's writing letters. He was an 18-year-old, a freshman in college, and it's just interesting because he did all of this because he wanted to research for a paper, and he was so like stuck where he was at home. This is just a story of like a person who feels so repressed, it's just really sad, but a person that actually felt so repressed and so, you know, like he didn't have many options in his life to actually explore what he was interested in. It just freaked people out that he was so interested in the criminal mind and understanding what it is and how it works and learning how criminals see their victims and treat their victims, and how a victim, the ideal victim would come across in a situation. It really lends a lot of insight to not only human nature, but it helps us understand different cases and different people and how they react and what they do to like perpetrate violence and all these horrible different like psychological tactics that they pull. And I don't know, I just think that this is a story that deserves to be told. This is a person that dedicated his life to understanding what people are like and how the human mind works whenever there's a criminal state. He just wanted to understand, if a person is not a psychopath, then why would they kill people, essentially? Like John Wayne Gacy, his number one pen pal, he just wanted to understand, how could a figure, like a public figure like John Wayne Gacy, who is, you know, affiliated with political parties, with the police, he had a family, and not only that, he had like successful businesses and a lot of money. He was, from the outside, completely normal. And it's just interesting because, well, actually, I don't know if John Wayne Gacy owned businesses, but I know that he was in charge of a chain of restaurants in which he used that platform to like perpetrate violence on certain people that worked for him. It's just really fucked up. So even with John Wayne Gacy, so he is a public figure, he's revered, he's being paid well, he's doing well by societal factors, and then out of nowhere, he gets arrested for murdering and raping, 35 boys they found? And there's a lot more, apparently, that could be connected to him, but we'll never fucking know, because he was so smart and he, well, not really smart. Burying this in your house is not very smart, but he was just very persuasive in the way that he talked. It got into Jason Moss's head too. Like, he thought that he could pretend to be this perfect victim and figure out John Wayne Gacy because he thought that he was perhaps a psychopath, but if he's not, he wanted to understand, like, okay, well, how does he go about perpetrating, like, his, like, disgusting values onto others and, like, spreading his beliefs onto others? He wanted to figure out, you know, how does this guy do this? And once he got in deep, he almost couldn't go back. He was, we'll get into the actual letters, but he was pretending to be his little brother even, because John Wayne Gacy got into his head so far that he was like, okay, well, now I need to pretend that my little brother is interested in him, since John Wayne Gacy keeps asking questions about my 14-year-old brother. And, oh, I don't know. It's just like, he ended up being John Wayne Gacy's last victim. Like, he became a victim unwillingly, but also wittingly, because he was the one that started the relationship and the exchange in order to learn about how people work whenever they're in that state of mind. And also, he wanted to understand, like, where all this comes from. He wanted to know more about John Wayne Gacy's life and the crimes. And hopefully he was, like, trying to get more information out of him and get him to, like, actually confess to murdering these people. Because he never would just blatantly confess. He just gave a million different excuses. So, in essence, this story is something that a lot of people don't experience, because he put himself in a very dangerous position, something that we wouldn't normally do, that people in general wouldn't normally do if they care about their mental state and their, you know, their lives, their livelihood, because serial killers are connected to many different people, because many people that aren't of sane mind send them letters and get feedback, essentially, which is something that Jason Moss discovered too, that serial killers actually give advice and directions on how to carry out their values because they have followers. Now, there is something that we need to keep in mind. Jason Moss was 18 years old when he was writing these letters. He was writing to multiple serial killers. And the main serial killer, he is famous for writing and keeping a steady correspondence with, is John Wayne Gacy. But he talked to Richard Ramirez, Jeffrey Dahmer shortly before he died. He also talked to Charles Manson and one other person named Elmer. I'm not exactly sure what his last name is, but he was communicating with multiple serial killers at one time. And while he was doing that, he was creating the perfect victim archetype so that those people would want to talk to him. And that is the scariest thing, is because not only did Jason write serial killers and try to be actual friends with them so that he can reveal their secrets, he allowed these people to get into his head, because that's what perpetrators do to victims. And if you're sitting there thinking about whether or not this was a healthy choice, there's no right or wrong answer. Of course, it's healthy in terms of wanting to cure your curiosity. But when it comes to actually, sorry, I got hiccups. But whenever it comes to actually wanting to understand the criminal mind, this was a very, very risky but influential way to do this. Many cops, many detectives, they ask questions that are so straightforward that they don't get any answers out of the actual killer. instead, they just get basic details that the killer wants them to know. And yeah, that's why the story is so interesting, because not only did Jason Moss learn how these people think, he was brought into all of their families as a victim. And that's what makes it even more terrifying. You have to think about the fact that he had to play the perfect victim 24/7 while also going through college at 18 years old. So this did a huge number on his mental state, a huge number on how he was able to be self-sufficient, happy, and calm throughout the whole thing. Besides that, he became depressed and he didn't know how to get out of this hole. And after a while, he stopped writing some of his pen pals. And once Gacy was killed, because he was ordered to death by the state, he felt a huge loss, because not only was John Wayne Gacy his pen pal, John Wayne Gacy got into his head so bad to where he believed that John Wayne Gacy was a friend. And even though he met him in prison and he tried to rape him, Jason still felt this huge sense of grief and he couldn't get over it right away. Throughout this episode, I'm going to read excerpts of the letters that were shared between him, Gacy, Richard Ramirez, and Jeffrey Dahmer, everybody in between, just because even though it's very shocking, just like my necromancy episode where I gave you all the spells, it's very shocking and it's very understandable, and we need to understand why this happened. And my number one priority throughout this whole entire series is to explain who Jason Moss was as a person and how this all affected him. Because, like I said, he killed himself on June 6, 2006, which is very strange because he was a highly dedicated criminal defense lawyer. He was extremely delicate and he was very intelligent whenever it came to his approaches to talking to any sort of serial killer. He would use their likes, their dislikes, their proclivities to violence and everything like that, and pretend like he knew what they were going through, and he would talk in their language. So yeah, these letters are very, very disturbing. Trigger warning, huge warning right now. If you are super, super scared to hear a real serial killer's letters as they're trying to indoctrinate somebody else into their belief system, it's very disturbing and it's very hard to listen to, and you're welcome to skip through. But as my duty as a podcaster and as my duty as a researcher, I want Jason Moss's name to be cleared as much as possible, because he was not a bad person. He was not crazy. He was just morbidly fascinated with these serial killers and wanted to know how they thought. So whenever he went into criminal defense, he knew whether or not a person was actually crazy or pretending to be crazy. So here we go. So first and foremost, Jason Moss, he lived in Henderson, Nevada, and he went to Green Valley High School, which is the same high school my mom went to. She remembers every time he would show up at a party, come to hang out, do anything. It was typically out of the blue, and he usually left very early. And in his book called The Last Victim by Jason Moss, he explains how every single instance where he was supposed to be social and keep up conversations about things that he did not have any interest in, anytime he was in that situation, he would find a way to get out. And whenever my mom was going to high school, he tried dating someone that she was close to, and he wanted to talk to her and kind of get her perspective on things. However, in his book, he mentions that he hung out with every single group in his high school because he wanted to understand how their dynamics worked. So it wasn't necessarily, oh, I want to be friends with you. It was more like, I want to understand your point of view so that whenever I get older, I can use this point of view as a way to inform my decisions. And that's what's really interesting, because he ended up dating his girlfriend in high school, and a lot of people knew about him. He would come around every so often. He would talk to people. He would be the quote-unquote perfect person to hang out with. He wasn't angry. He wasn't irrational. He usually had very, very thought-provoking things to say. And whenever people weren't necessarily paying attention to him, or whenever he knew that he wasn't wanted, he would just leave. And I feel like that is a huge indication as to who he was as a person, and also how he acted whenever he was in public. So whenever it comes to after college, he focuses, sorry, not after college, after high school, he focused solely on school. That's all he wanted to do. And my mom, I remember that she told me whenever they were talking that he was super interested in the criminal mind and serial killers. And my mom would dive into those conversations with him. She's very interested in that too. But they weren't actual best friends, if that makes sense. He was hanging out with the quote-unquote goth crowd, which is what my mom was a part of. And he found a newfound appreciation for them, but he wasn't very close to these people. He kept a distance from literally everybody else besides his brother and his mom and dad. And whenever he was growing up, his mom and dad were not the best influences, especially his mom. His mom was a very controlling figure. And whenever he expressed any sort of desire to do something that was outside of her realm of comfort, she would automatically say no, even if he was 18. And this carried on to his little brother as well. And his little brother, I don't know exactly how he grew up, but I do know that Jason was really, really dedicated to his little brother. Even whenever he was friends with my mom or acquaintances or anybody else, he mentioned his brother all the time. He was very, very protective of him. And as you will hear later on in the story, he even protected his little brother from letters from John Wayne Gacy, because John Wayne Gacy wanted to communicate with someone who was 14 years old and somebody who was 18 years old, because he thought that he could initiate an incestual relationship between the two of them. Because according to Jason's character that he gave to John Wayne Gacy, he was a sex worker. He was charging people for money to have sex with him and basically assault him and everything else. And he said all these things because that is what John Wayne Gacy likes. He enjoys humiliating people. He enjoyed humiliating people. He enjoyed manipulating their lives and their thought process. And he really enjoyed just essentially breaking someone down to the point where they are the perfect victim for him. And this was just the start of that. And we'll get into the letters later, but I want to talk about all the relationships he had so far. So with Jeffrey Dahmer, he sent a few photos because Jeffrey Dahmer wanted photos of him. He would say, please send me a photo of what you look like. I want to know who I'm talking to. Jeffrey Dahmer is not a very confrontational person. We all know this. He had to get shit-faced drunk in order to kill someone. So whenever he was sober in jail writing letters, everything came across as creepy, but it was well-written and it was very subtle. And whenever he communicated back with Jeffrey Dahmer, he would send photos of him at the beach or something like that. And Jeffrey wanted to actually see him. And whenever he couldn't go see him, a few weeks later, Jeffrey Dahmer was beaten to death in jail. So he really didn't have a chance to build that relationship. But per Jason Moss's word, he could not keep up with all these different correspondents with different serial killers pretending to be the perfect victim 24/7. It started to get to him mentally, and he started to feel disgusting. He didn't know how to feel about himself. But anyway, moving on to a short clip about Richard Ramirez, he impersonated a satanic church priest because as we all know, Satanism is not about worshiping Satan and doing all of his biddings. It's essentially a non-God religious group. They believe that Satanism is a funny term and describes if you want to do something towards somebody else, it's okay. If you want to do something for yourself, it's okay, as long as you're not hurting anybody else. So it's kind of like, it's kind of like that whole philosophy where you're able to do whatever you want and there's no consequences, which is called existentialism. And existentialism basically states that if you do what you feel is right, then it's not wrong because that's your truth. But with Satanism, it's a lot different. You get to do what you want as long as you don't hurt other people. So whenever Jason was looking into Richard Ramirez, he would study a bunch of books about Satanism in terms of worshiping Satan, witchcraft, everything else. And he crafted the perfect letters to him. And Richard Ramirez would send back pictures, like little drawings of himself. If you look up pictures from Richard Ramirez, about half of them are the pictures that he sent to Jason Moss. Especially the one called, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but something in pieces. And there's a woman who is chopped up into pieces. And she's on a little table, like a little counter. And it's just her torso. Her eyes are gouged out. Oh, April. It's called Pieces of April. And he sent that to him. And then he also sent a picture of his hand. And on the top of one of his fingers, there was like a little triangle and a little star. And it essentially said that, like, if he... Oh, evil hands are good hands. I believe that's what it said. Something along those lines that, like, oh yeah, happy hands are evil hands. So, yeah, he experienced a lot of weird shit coming through his actual address. And that's the other thing. Jason Moss was very, very smart. So if he wanted to build a relationship with serial killers, he wasn't going to use a P.O. box. He used his actual address, which is highly dangerous, but at the same time, that was the only way he could subtly convince these people that he's not looking for information, he just wants to get to know them, even though his whole entire thing was to get to know these serial killers, figure out how they actually think, and write a term paper about this. This whole entire expedition was based on a term paper he wanted to write for his class. And he wanted to be recognized by the FBI for his intelligence. And he also wanted to be recognized by other institutions based on the fact that he was able to get into the criminal mind in a way nobody else had before. And the reason why his book is called The Last Victim, like I said earlier, he was literally the last victim of John Wayne Gacy. He was one of the few last victims of all these few people that wanted to get control over him, such as Jeffrey Dahmer, Richard Ramirez, and Charles Manson is, I don't even know. All the messages that he had with Charles Manson were complete nonsense, and it only lasted about 10 pages out of the book. Manson was not the best person to communicate with. All he wanted to do was connect Jason to other people that believed in what Charlie believed and ask him to spend quality time with them, have sleepovers, stay at their commune, blah, 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 blah. As opposed to John Wayne Gacy, who gave him explicit instructions on how to molest his brother and get him to engage, even if he doesn't. So, yeah. Throughout this video, throughout this podcast, we're going to go through the letters that they actually sent to one another. And we're also going to go over the letters that were sent between him and Richard Ramirez. Because, like I said, him and Jeffrey Dahmer had a short correspondence. Jeffrey basically saying that he wanted pictures, and then he died. So, let's just get to it. This is one of the craziest episodes. But remember, more than anything, Jason Moss, 18 years old, first year out of college, writing several serial killers over and over again, and collecting phone calls from them once to twice to three to four times a week, depending on what Gacy wanted. It was pretty fucking insane. He didn't give his number to Richard Ramirez because he said he didn't have a phone. And he didn't give his number to Jeffrey because Jeffrey never asked. In essence, this is a tale about Jason Moss being broken down into a fucking victim by John Wayne Gacy. And yeah, he killed himself June 6, 2006. But that was way after everything happened with Richard Ramirez, after everything happened with John Wayne Gacy. He had Jason Moss. He had a family, a house, and kids. And June 6, 2006, they found him in the bathroom after he shot himself in the head. So nobody really knows what caused this kind of suicide to happen. And there's no clear answer. That's the even creepier part, is that there is no real answer. There was no note. There was nothing signifying why he died on that day. But a lot of people theorize that he was connected with Richard Ramirez and he got into his head. It's possible. It's super possible. But at the same time, he had to live with himself after writing letters to John Wayne Gacy as himself and as his little brother. And he had to pretend that they were having an incestual relationship 24/7. That does a huge thing on your mindset. That has a huge impact on your psyche. That makes you believe that you are actually a victim and you are at this person's disposal. And after a while, you know, at the beginning, he was totally in control. He was super excited and he knew that he had to just plan what he had to say to get some sort of confession out of John Wayne Gacy. But instead, John Wayne Gacy turned it all around and created another victim right before he went off to death row. So let's start off with the letter that started it all. It was on a typewriter and it was dated November 24th, 1993. What Jason said was, "Hey, Mr. Gacy, my name is Jason Moss. I'm a full-time student at UNLV, University of Nevada, Las Vegas. I'm 18 years old, and I'm writing you because I thought that you might get bored or lonely wherever you are, and you might want someone to correspond with. I saw your pictures in a magazine called Zone Productions. I saw the pictures you drew of Pogo the Clown. I think that your drawings are pretty great. I'm sure that there are probably hundreds of people who are writing to you, but I hope that you will take the time to write me back. You will see that I'm a pretty nice guy and that there are probably a lot of things that we could talk to each other about. My address is blah, 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 blah. At this point, I really don't know what to talk to you about until you write me back. Let me know your interests, anything you are going through and want to talk about, or anything else that you want to know about me. Also, if there's anything you need, like supplies, paper, etc., just let me know. I would be happy to help. I look forward to hearing from you so soon. Your friend, Jason Moss." So, you can see the message is tailored in the perfect form of a victim. Let's break it down. So, he wrote that he's a full-time student, which makes you believe if you know how the American system works, you know that this person is poor. "I just thought that you might get bored and lonely where you are, and you might want to correspond with someone." That is an invitation to create a relationship. He is basically saying, if you need anything, if you need supplies, blah, 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 I got you. He is essentially saying, I am here for your service, no matter what you want. And then whenever he says that hundreds of people are writing to you, but I hope you write back, I'm a pretty nice guy, blah, 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 blah. It essentially says that, yeah, I know that you have a lot of people writing you, but I stand out because I have a lot of things that are in common with you. And what happened after this letter is completely terrifying. However, I'm going to give you an excerpt from the last victim because it's very, very insightful. So Jason Moss, he states, "It was that moment that the vague idea that tugged at the edge of my consciousness in the bookstore began to clarify itself. I wondered what would happen if I wrote Gacy a letter. I read that he was still on death row, waiting for his scheduled execution. I figured he was probably bored and in need of diversion. For me, the question wasn't why I'd write someone like Gacy, but why anyone would be curious about what made him the way he was. Was the act of killing for the 33rd time any different from the 17th? How could this guy excel in maintaining two separate lives, community leader by day and murderous predator by night? It seems to me that these were questions that anyone would want answered. The more I read about serial killers, the more convicted I became. The police and forensic psychologists weren't exploring all possible venues of inquiry. Surely, what was needed was more than having captured killers completely, but to actually figure out how they think." So, his parents were very, very concerned. His mom would say, "Why on earth would you want to write a killer? And why would he write back to some kid like you? You're not even allowed to do something like that." Jason Moss says, Where'd you get that idea? I can write whoever I want. And this is the thing that happened in his house all the fucking time. His mom would put him down, make him feel like shit about himself for doing something that he's interested in, even though, rightfully, it's very dangerous. And he would want to figure out what's going on. So whenever it came to Gacy's reply, he sent him a huge questionnaire, which is something John Wayne Gacy doesn't do often. Sorry, I'm hiccuping. But anyway, John Wayne Gacy, he ended up basically telling him that if he wanted to be in his life, he had to answer all these questions beforehand. Most of the questions revolved around, how much does he masturbate? What does he think about whenever he masturbates? How many times has he had sex? Where is he going to school? It was a mix of normal questions and very, very sexual questions. And instead of just ignoring him, Jason Moss did the unthinkable, being the perfect victim, and answered every single question the way Gacy wanted it to be questioned and answered. So it turned into a very, very sexual, uncomfortable relationship from the start. So Jason, he said, "Look, it's no big deal. It's sort of outrageous, but that's why it's so cool. Who else would do this? Besides, these guys are all locked up in prison. What's the harm?" And that was his biggest mistake. These people are locked up, obviously. They have done a lot of crimes. They have murdered a lot of people. And they've also perpetrated a lot of violence through other people. And Jason just wanted to accept the fact that he was at a distance. And that was his big downfall. His mother knew that it was going to lead into a very, very macabre situation. However, if you're controlled 24/7 by your mother or father, you're not going to want to do what they want 24/7. You're going to try to find independence. And this whole journey is about Jason trying to find his independence by figuring out the criminal mind and being broken down in the end. Here's a little insight into Jason's head and how he actually talked to John Wayne Gacy. So whenever he actually written John Wayne Gacy and there was no communication with his parents or anything like that, this is what the chapter says. "It was pretty clear to me that at this point, I couldn't talk frankly to anyone about what I was doing. When I looked at myself through the eyes of my family or friends, I really did seem strange. Wherever I was going, and whatever I was doing alone, if valuable things were kept from the law enforcement and mental health experts. Though at the time, I lacked the self-awareness to see it, I was definitely suffering from delusions and grandeur. As I thought more about it, I decided the best way to attract Gacy's attention, given the killer's homosexuality, was to pretend to be sexually confused and highly impressionable. I would concoct some stories about my childhood that mirrored his own childhood. For example, I'd claim that I'd been younger and that my father had bullied me. One obvious problem was that I understood so little about the world Gacy inhabited. I was going to pretend to be gay, or at least leaning into that direction, and I didn't know the first thing about what that meant. I've always been curious about things that are beyond my own experience, especially if they're the least bit forbidden. Though at the time, I lacked the self-awareness to see it, I definitely suffered from delusions of grandeur. As I thought about it, I decided the best way to attract Gacy's attention, given the killer's homosexuality, was to pretend to be sexually confused and highly impressionable. I would concoct some stories about my childhood that mirrored his own childhood. For example, I would claim I'd been sexually abused when I was younger and that my father had bullied me. One obvious problem was that I understood so little about the world Gacy inhabited. I was going to pretend to be gay, or at least leaning in that direction, and I didn't know the first thing about what that meant. I remember one time Jen and I passed a cemetery, a very unusual looking one, and on a whim, I pretended to be shopping for a plot so I can get a tour of the place. I followed the same pattern, and again, whenever I'd see something that appeals to me, it scares me. The world of homosexuality was, to me, foreign, but also a culture fascination. I've had gay acquaintances in the past, and I admired the courage it took to deal with the stuff they had to face on a daily basis. Like most other kids my age, I feared such a lifestyle, felt threatened by it also, and up to that point, I never had the courage to say any direct questions. So essentially, this guy, he's living in a world where all these things are somewhat normal, right? Somewhat normal, something that he can talk to his friends to. But at the same time, like, I live in Reno, so sexual openness, sex work, all that shit, it's very, very normal. Like, if I were to talk to someone about it outside of this state, it would be a different story. But essentially what Jason Moss is doing is that he is hardcore investigating, man. Like, he is very, very hardcore investigating on the lifestyle he's about to enter and also the lifestyle that he is somewhat aware of. And I don't need to read the book to tell you this. He ended up meeting with a sex worker on the corner of a very high populated street. And he painted... I'm sorry, I'm so tired. He paid that person to give him information about the sex trade. And whenever he got the information, the guy left. And Jason was able to, like, decipher what he needed to do in order to convince Gacy that he was an actual homosexual. It's not like Jason ever engaged in these activities. All he ever did was create a creative narrative, something that somebody else could believe, and he used the experience that he learned from somebody else as his way of writing his dialogue. He used that as some sort of light or some sort of, like, temperament in which he has to, like, taper down his emotions and heighten other people's. Like, he is very fucking smart. And that's what's very scary about the story, is that he was so fucking smart. But no matter how smart you are, serial killers have a way of getting in your head. And this was the beginning. He barely knew John Wayne Gacy. And the longer he got to know him, the worse it got. Like, whenever he went to visit John Wayne Gacy in a prison cell, which we'll talk about later, he was completely unaware, Jason, he was completely unaware that all the cameras were going to be turned away, that he was going to be left alone with Gacy with no guards walking back and forth. He had no idea what he was walking into, but he wanted to learn. And that's what's very valuable. He wanted to learn what these people were going through, even though it might put him in trouble. And being in trouble, being in that sort of circumstance where you have to like, oh, I don't know if it's going to be safe or not. Like, usually people are going to walk away. But Jason did the unthinkable, like I said, and kept going. He kept pushing and he found his way home. He found his way to a situation where he could actually explain it in criminal terms and also be able to realize whether or not his future clients are lying about being criminally insane, or if they are literally not sure about their actions and you don't even know what to term it. And by that point, you are insane clinically because you don't understand how you did things wrong. Like Ed Gein, he did not understand what he did wrong whatsoever. And he was not treated like shit by the police. He was then escorted and he was treated by people that understand his mental condition. It's very interesting. Okay, so now whenever Gacy sent messages, it was very, very personal, right? But Jason would act very either stupid or he would act like he had so much innocence in his mind that he couldn't necessarily say something rude. Like, how many times do you masturbate a day? He probably said like 1 to 2. I don't really do it too much. And if he didn't say that, he would say, oh, 5 to 6 times, because Gacy enjoys either one, right? And all these questions were about him, his family, his career, who he was as a person, and if he was submissive. And the thing is that Jason Moss wasn't John Wayne Gacy's only pen pal throughout this whole thing. Like I said, his brother was a quote-unquote pen pal. And the only letter that Jason Moss made him write was an introductory letter, essentially saying like, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah. I just wanted to get to know you. My brother said you're cool, stuff like that. And after that, Jason started collecting all the letters for himself so that he could read them and use a typewriter. And use the typewriter to essentially say, hey, I'm blah, blah, blah's brother. I just wanted to like let you know that I'm learning how to use a typewriter. And it was like a very innocent, heartfelt letter. It was very cute. And John Wayne Gacy felt the same. He was like, oh, that's cute, blah, blah, blah. And he talked to Jason, and I can't remember his peekaboo name. He's fucking alias, but essentially Jason went ahead and said that like, yeah, I've been very like sexually frustrated, and started talking about all the sex work and how it's been getting to his head because some people are very abusive and he wants to like stop doing it, but he doesn't know what else to do. And John Wayne Gacy essentially said that some people that go into sex work, they get beaten, they get hurt, they have stuff happen to him, or sorry, have stuff happening to them that shouldn't happen to anybody else, and I'm so sorry. And he was like very sympathetic, but at the same time saying that Jason should expect to get abused if he is being used for sex consensually. And that thought process typically works with a gay guy that is into a big fat dude with a hair mustache, just like John Wayne Gacy. But at the same time, there are a lot of men that are very attractive that would be fine with something like that happening. And with John Wayne Gacy, he wanted to control every single person in his life. And
I'm not afraid to say that. He's dead. He's a horrible person. He buried all these fucking boys in his basement. No. If you want to make fun of me or you want to fucking send lawyers toward me, go fucking ahead. Because this is such an old case and it's not even relevant. He is, like, his whole entire image is tainted because he wanted it to be. No more questions? Okay, cool. But anyway, Jason, he was sincerely concerned about the fact that John Wayne Gacy had gone to his head, and even though he was not the same person that he represented himself to be, he held all the letters that were supposed to be for his brother, and he decided to use a typewriter, like I said, to pretend to be his little brother. So while he's writing letters to John Wayne Gacy, Richard Ramirez, Jeffrey Dahmer, and another serial killer, and another one that I saw in The Last Victim. I can't remember his name. So he was writing like 5 or 6 people at once. And during this whole correspondence, like, even though he's supposed to be 14, the way he's typing and like looking at his messages and like proofreading them and sending them, it's about like 11th grade level, I would say, at that point. I don't know what it's like now. But John Wayne Gacy, he tried to convince Jason to allow his little brother to ass rape him. Like, literally ass rape him, essentially. And Jason wrote a letter to keep him hooked. And he was like, yeah, we did that, blah, blah, blah. And John Wayne Gacy replies, how did it make you feel knowing who was doing that to you? How did you feel knowing that you were getting off to somebody that's related to you? Shit like that. And it was like, he would get into his head and say, yeah, this is a good thing. And it was mainly because Gacy and his sister, I don't know how it started, but I'm going to say Gacy started it because he's fucking insane. Whenever he was a child, a truck driver and also his dad's friend would make him, as an 8-year-old, John Wayne Gacy, give blowjobs to the guy that was a truck driver. And after a while, John Wayne Gacy started sneaking into his sister's bedroom and trying to have sex with her, oral sex, anything that involved the vagina and the dick. He wanted something in that realm. And then throughout their childhood, they had sex all the time. And I don't even know if it's consensual after a while, but that got into Jason's head. That made him feel like, what the fuck am I supposed to write? Like, I don't want to have sex with my brother. I don't want to do any of this stuff. I'm literally doing this for a class project. And the more he gets deeper and deeper into these fucking fantasies of John Wayne Gacy, it gets so much worse. It's so sad. However, that's the end of this episode. I want to leave you in a bit of intrigue. I want you to wonder who Jason is, what the relationship was like with John Wayne Gacy and him and other serial killers, because the next episode, I'm going to be reading every fucking letter that was retrieved and sent, that was recorded in the book called The Last Victim by Jason Moss. I think that his story is so interesting because very, very little people get into the mind of the serial killer just like he did. And he got into the mind of a serial killer by trying to manipulate him, trying to manipulate all of these different people that he was writing to. And it didn't work out because they ended up manipulating him in the end, besides Charles Manson, because Charles Manson's letters were completely off the wall, which we will definitely go through. But yeah, that's it. So thank you everyone for coming to my podcast. I hope that entertained you.
I have a link attached to every single profile that I have that leads to every podcast, Instagram page, merch page, no matter what, for Blood Rituals, Bipolar Baddies, and for my custom rune and tarot sets that I'm making. If you want to support me, go ahead. If not, just listen, and I hope you enjoy. Peace, bitches, and I hope you have an amazing week.